Good afternoon. Starting with the poster that we used for the 100th anniversary of the occupational health section of APHA, which occurred last year, and we started a history project with that celebration of 100 years, and we continue that today. And this talk is one of a series of talks that we will try to do on occupational health and safety in the past 100 years. What I'm going to cover today is the adoption of occupational disease compensation in early workers' compensation law in California. I have no relationships to disclose. The history of workers' compensation corresponds closely with the history of the APHA occupational health section. Dr. Alice Hamilton, Harvard's first woman professor and the second chair of the industrial hygiene section, which became the occupational health section of APHA, recognized that occupational diseases were cheap for economic, political, and social reasons. There was no system of compensation to equate social and private costs. There were few factory inspectors expert and courageous enough to impose compliance costs. And most of the factory workers and injury victims were foreign-born and non-English speaking, and thus were less able to protect themselves. Hamilton did a census of lead poisoning in the United States and showed the disease to be far worse in the United States than in Britain and elsewhere, with half as many workers. American pottery manufacturers were showing twice as many lead poisoning cases. She said, of late years, there has been an enormous decline in this type of industrial poisoning in England due to sanitary regulation, while in this country, there's almost an entire absence of such regulation. If American wages are higher and living conditions better, these advantages are offset by the lack of sanitary control and of proper regulations for the protections of workers. As early as 1911, California law required medical practitioners to report patients suffering from occupational diseases to the State Board of Health. The reporting was separate from the then voluntary workers' compensation system, evolving as a measure of public health. The diseases that were considered occupational for this reason, for this reporting, included the effects of exposure to lead, arsenic, phosphorus, mercury, anthrax, and compressed air. The emerging public health movement regarded prevention of occupational diseases as having broader implications than simply affecting workers. They thought it was part of a general and preventable threat to the health of the populace. For instance, lead dust brought home by workers at battery manufacturing plants was found to be a cause of lead poisoning in small children. So clearly, the public health reporting laws recognized the link between occupational and environmental health, even at that beginning stage. The Federal Government's Compensation Act, The Federal Government's Compensation Act that was started in 1908 for certain occupations had covered many of its employees' industrial injuries, but the law excluded occupational disease. A Brooklyn Navy Yard worker employed to strip paint from a warship was incapacitated for 37 days from lead poisoning. But his claim for compensation under the Federal Act was denied because, quote, technically it is not an accident. Under the circumstances, it is a dead certainty. A folder of heavy paper at the government printing office developed a tumor in her hand when continuous strain upon her fingers and hand caused a degeneration of the tendon sheath. Surgery was necessary. But when the GPO medical officer found that five other skilled laborers similarly employed had manifested the same condition, he determined that since the condition involved, quote, no accidental element, it was not due to injury, and therefore the claim was denied. In 1913, a bill pertaining to occupational disease coverage for federal employees was introduced and favorably reported by the House Judiciary Committee, but it did not become law. In an article in 1913, John Andrews, who this session is dedicated to, wrote that the inhalation of fumes in a case of occupational disease was to be expected and probably could not be avoided. So that the lead poisoning that was denied to the worker was the natural, if not the inevitable, result, and that meant that it couldn't be compensated. Many states followed the lead of the federal system, restricting claims to accidental acute injuries. In Michigan, the Industrial Accident Board denied a claim when it found that, quote, disability was caused not by a sudden occurrence, but by a gradual process through which the cyanide poisoning was absorbed into the system, making it an occupational disease instead of an accident. It has been held that such injuries are not covered by the law. In Ohio, at the same time, the state Supreme Court denied payment for medical services because, quote, disability from lead poisoning is not compensable under the law, and that whenever disability is not compensable, no award for medical service can be made. California's 1913 Boynton Act, the first mandatory workers' compensation system in California, also excluded injuries to accidents. So the effort to create a mandatory compensation program did not include expansion of the system for diseases. Under the Boynton Act, compensation was only awarded to injured workers for accidents, and the commissioners of the Industrial Accident Commission were obliged by law to deny claims not due to single event traumatic injuries. In May 1914, a lead-poisoned employee of the Bauer Pottery Company applied for total disability benefits. He had been immersing his hands and arms in chemical glaze while glazing pottery. The private insurer, sought a literal interpretation of the accidental injury clause of the law, and drawing on the decision in other states, found that lead poisoning was an occupational disease and therefore could not be compensated. In subsequent decisions, the commission ruled that only accidental injuries which were, quote, unforeseen, without design, happening without the concurrence of the injured party, and unintended or unexpected by the employee could be compensable. In the IAC's next occupational disease case, the claimant alleged vision loss from job-related wood alcohol poisoning. Well, DeWitt used an extraordinary quantity of the alcohol in cleaning the apparatus and in washing and cleaning his hands. But the IAC was straining to dissociate this sort of poisoning case from the previous ones, and a majority reasoned that while the legislature had not contemplated the inclusion of the 20 or 25 recognized occupational diseases such as lead poisoning, tuberculosis, etc., in enacting the Compensation Act, it said that other illnesses, such as those from wood alcohol poisoning, were, quote, not among the number of diseases standardized and commonly classified as occupational disease. So the commission made a stance that well-known disease risks, like lead poisoning from welding or silicosis from rock crushing, would not be compensable, but exotic diseases occurring in an unforeseen way might at least merit a hearing. In 1915, Winifred McDonald, a chambermaid, developed dermatitis from exposure to cleaning materials on her job. The condition worsened, became inflamed, and eventually required hospitalization, but because it arose as an occupational disease, not ordinarily arising out of employment, her claim for compensation was denied. So this led to this quandary of occupational disease and cumulative trauma. The Industrial Accident Commission was trying to figure out a way, because they were trying to compensate injured workers, but they were trying to use their denials of occupational disease claims as a way of forcing the legislature to take attention to this issue, and said there are certain classes of injuries which deserve to be compensated, but which are not caused by anything that can be construed as an accident. The issue as to whether or not a certain injury constituted an accident is extremely difficult to determine. Several subjects, this quote from the Industrial Accident Commission report of 1915, said that the commission will have to try to figure this one out, and eventually we'll have established sufficient precedents for easy guidance. So in 1915, the California legislature did bring up and pass a measure that allowed for the compensation of occupational disease. It was called the most far-reaching provision of the 1915 amendments to the 1913 law, and it was to give coverage for occupational diseases and unlimited medical service to those who were injured on the job. The Labor Clarion, the state labor paper of the time, declared striking the amendment that an injury be by accident was the most far-reaching provision of the act, making possible claims for chronic occupational diseases and cumulative trauma. There was a steady increase in the number of cases that came to the board. And the board realized that because of these amendments, there would be a lot of more cases of difficult determination in the system, but they were ready to handle it. But the next issue that came up was, well, how do you pay for this? If you're adding this type of extra compensation to the act, how do you price it? How do you make a different mechanism for pricing this? And they understood that in the pricing of even occupational injuries, it was tough, but for diseases, it was going to be even tougher. The IAC argument included adding a 3% increase in system cost for these occupational diseases, and that figure was, to some extent, pulled out of the air. After passage, the estimates began to rise. The 3% increase might cover the cost of strictly occupational diseases such as lead poisoning, but some of the insurers who were dealing with the law realized that this might open up the system to a lot more things that could be considered occupational. A committee of the Casualty Underwriters Association was expected to cooperate with the Workers' Comp Service Bureau, the early rating bureaus for the workers' comp industry, to determine what classifications of work would need to have this pricing differential. And the committee was given 2 months to figure it out. The law went into effect 2 months later without any real agreement as to what this surcharge should be. And things worked on in there, and the state started to realize that really occupational disease compensation was an area where there was overlap between general health care and occupational related injuries and illnesses. And so the state established a social insurance commission in 1915 to try to work out, well, what should happen? If we're going to compensate for occupational disease, we're going to bring in a lot of things which are partially occupational and partially not. And maybe we should have a total health care system for California. Good idea. The social insurance system was intended to complement the Industrial Accident Commission that had been established a few years earlier. And they expected that it would just lead to the social safety net being expanded and that workers' compensation would be joined by health insurance and maybe eventually unemployment insurance and other family benefits to make for a more a less porous safety net in the state of California. And the eventual recommendations of the Social Insurance Commission gave the IAC the responsibility to oversee and implement this integrated system. But the proposal confronted opposition from many groups. Christian Scientists, many members of organized medical care, and others brought up the fact that if this was 1918, there was a war against Germany going on, and Germany was seen as the place where health insurance had started, or at least how it was brought up. So in November 1918, after the opposition had come out in force and the vote went to the populace of California under the initiative statutes of California, it was defeated by a 3-1 margin, and social insurance was dealt a setback. And maybe next year we can talk about where it went from there. Thank you.